All right, welcome into the hours. We are excited to spend another episode with you. I'm joined by my good friend Tyler. Tyler, welcome.
Mark, it feels like it's been many weeks since you and I have been on. It feels like we've been kind of like missing each other, bouncing around. Good to be back.
Yeah, feels good, man. I'm excited to learn from you.
I'm excited to learn as well. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot, like in having these conversations with coaches, I just got back from North Dakota, where I got to work with a program and another coach, three or four coaches actually came in and hung out a little bit, is when a coach asks me a question, it forces me to really think and reassess and practice my articulation. I was just thinking about that. If for anyone listening, if you're not in a situation where you're being challenged, asked questions, where you like have to be creative, I think you're really limiting yourself. It's really good to put yourself around people that don't agree with you. I really value that with people in my life. Like, I don't know, you need to convince me of that a little bit more. So that's just a small observation here on the hours that I wanted to share. All right, Mark, which person in your life is the most at times frustrating to talk to because they just like are skeptical or cynical or like never agree with you, but you're also very grateful for them because of that?
Oh man, I'm gonna give a shout out to former assistant coach Billy Berto. He was a coach that was on my staff that was great with the players, great basketball mind, but we just had different kind of wavelengths of thinking, but his was really good. And he challenged me on a lot of things. And I actually went to dinner with him not long ago. And I actually told him, I wish I would have listened to you more because you were really like challenging my thinking. And it's sometimes as a head coach, that's difficult because you want people to be on your side, but it is, you're right. It is so valuable to have people that will push the envelope. And thankfully he was pushing it to even a more open, innovative, modern approach. I think I would really struggle if somebody was trying to go backwards on me, but he really pushed me to try new things.
I like that. Okay. I'm going to give a shout out to my friend, Jordan Marinick. Every time I talk to Jordan, he is presenting me with a new conspiracy theory. Anytime I say something, he's like, well, what makes you believe that? Like, it's never an easy conversation. And he has no filter of like just challenging me. And I really appreciate that about him. And like, it's one of those things that you don't recognize the value of it until you see its absence. And so like, when I don't talk to him for a while, and I talk to him again, I'm like, whoa, this is jarring. I really have missed this. So anyway, I would just encourage everyone, find someone like that in your life that's willing to challenge you, bring new ideas to the table. Season of giving. We are in our season of giving right now. If you're following along with any of our social media or any of our emails, we really want to celebrate this season of giving, this holiday season, by giving something to you as a thank you and encouraging you to give it to someone else. For this season of giving, we are having a sweepstakes drawing at the end of this month with over $6,000 worth of prizes. And all you have to do to be in the drawing is upgrade to annual. If you commit to us 1 year of your life to go through our monthly cohorts, get access to all of our courses, get video breakdown from Mark and myself, get access to our exclusive paid member only community. If you commit to that for 1 year, you get entered in to a chance to win a program clinic where Mark or I come in and work with you and your program. You get a chance to win 1 month of courtside consulting or one-on-one consulting specific to your program, or a chance to get a Savvy gear package. You'll get a raffle for that. And we're discounting our regularly priced $1,000 a year normally, just under $1,000 a year. We're taking it down to $777 right here for the season of giving, and we're giving you an extra month. So it's actually not 12 months, it's 13 months. That is our season of giving gift to you. It goes away December 20th. You must take advantage before December 20th. All the links will be in the description if you want to take advantage of that season of giving. Here's the gift you can give to someone else. If you refer any friend, family member, or coach in your network, if you refer them to our paid monthly membership, we are actually going to give you 100% of their first month, because we believe in what we're doing so much that we want every one of you to share the gift of savvy. You can choose to keep that money for yourself. You can choose to give it back to the person you refer, so it's completely free for them. Every person you refer, we're going to give you 100% of their monthly membership as well. And whoever refers the most people here in the month, we're actually going to, we're going to give them a larger gift as well. So that is our season of giving. We're giving you the annual, we're giving the raffle, and we're asking that you refer. All that information is going to be in your inbox in an email. Welcome to the season of giving. Okay, Mark, anything to add to the season of giving that I may have missed?
Yes, sir. How can I give you my credit card to sign up? That sounds great.
Absolutely. Just give me your social security number, your address, and your Bitcoin cold wallet. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Actually, I got a comment. I can't remember where they messaged this. Like, since you told everyone to buy Bitcoin on the hours, he's like, it's up 85% since you told everyone to buy Bitcoin. He's like, my biggest regret is not buying Bitcoin. He's like, we need more financial advice on the hours. We need more financial advice on the hours. I agree. Okay, here's your financial advice on the hours. We're gonna do a little 30-second blurb. Borrow to invest in appreciating assets, pay cash for depreciating assets. And so I would say, what's the best appreciating asset that I know? It's real estate. If you can invest in real estate, you'll make money five ways, and you should borrow as much money, really even at current interest rates, in order to get an investment real estate property. I'm going to give you five reasons why you should invest in real estate right now. Here it is. Number one, appreciation. Over an 8-year period in the United States, no real estate investment has gone down, no residential real estate investment. Two, principal reduction. When you invest in real estate, the principal goes down over time, and so you actually make more money that way as well. Three, rent increases. If you have an investment property, rent goes up over time while your mortgage stays the same, so your cash flow is going to improve. Four, tax savings. It is the best way to offset any other tax gains, is you can take massive depreciation and tax losses. And then five, there is an amount of monthly cash flow as well. So if you can, you should invest in real estate today. And that is your friendly, savvy financial advice. Shout out to, I think it was Jonathan that asked about that one.
Coaches, if you have any questions on real estate advice or financial advice or the season of giving, reach out to us. You should be in our free community. If you're not, get in there and shoot Tyler and I a DM, and we'll help you get over to the paid community where you can upgrade to annual or refer your friends and put money in your pocket.
And if you need more money, buy real estate. That's right. Anyone with a W-2 job should instantly buy an investment property. Let me go in on this a little bit more. There is a coach in Michigan who I won't name until he gives me his permission, who we had this real estate conversation at a coach's clinic 7 years ago. He's like, I'm a teacher. I could never invest in real estate. I said, oh, really? Tell me why. And so we worked it out. And it actually turned out that they could afford to buy a new house without selling their current house. So they bought a new house just down the street, turned the current house into a rental property. Here we are, 6 or 7 years later. He's flipped two houses. He has two rental properties, still on just a single teacher's salary in Michigan. You can do it too. He said it was the best decision that he ever made on his path to financial freedom. Gosh, we might have to do a deep dive cohort on real estate investing.
Would love it. Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. Let's, everybody's playing games right now. You're the head coach of a team and your team goes through 2, 3, 4 game losing streak. How do you keep your team's confidence?
I'm going to add a part B to that big question, if I may, because I think it's also really important. It's how do you keep your team's confidence and how do you teach them to hate losing? One, if your team's confidence is wavering in the midst of a losing streak, there are three mistakes that are being made in your program that you need to adjust. Mistake number one, we're too attached to outcome. Just as a culture and standard of your program, if a losing streak shakes your confidence, that means that our value, our identity, and our goals are only associated with winning a single game and not developing, growing, mastering our craft as a program. There's too much emphasis on this. And a lot of times this emphasis is more implied. And what I mean by that is we can say all the right words as a coach and a leader, like trust the process and, you know, we're getting better at these things. But when we visibly show how disappointed we are as a coach after losses, as we start to feel anxious and stressed, it doesn't matter what you say, right? They you're telling on yourself. They know that you're lying when you say it's okay, unless it actually is okay. And so I think that's mistake number one, is from the top down, too much of a focus on the outcome. That's when confidence gets shaken. Mistake number two, focusing too much on what you're doing wrong. When you're on a losing streak, or at any time when you're underperforming, it becomes really glaring and obvious what we're not doing well. We're not matching up in transition well. Our defensive rebounding is bad. And so that gets most of the attention. It gets the attention in film. It gets the attention in what we talk about. It gets the attention in practice. It's just, we got to get better at this. We got to get better. We got to get better at this. If we magnified, I believe this was Abraham Lincoln that said this, if not some other famous person, if we magnified our successes the way we magnified our defeats, we'd all be a lot more confident. And it really just goes back to what we're magnifying. You know, when on a losing streak, we're magnifying everything that's wrong. Instead, you can still find things that we're doing well. Magnify what's going right. I'll give an example of this. Another coach reached out and said, we just lost a game by 5 points and we missed 25 free throws in the game. He's like, we suck at free throws. I need some help to help us make free throws. And I would actually say, no, you're magnifying the wrong thing. You're magnifying that we suck at free throws. And if you say that, we got to make our free throws, we got to get some free throw practice, right? We're shooting terrible free throws. We'd win if we could only make free throws. Well, the next time any player on your team goes to the free throw line, they have less confidence and more pressure, as opposed to magnify your successes. If you lost by 5 and missed 25 free throws, you played a great game. You're generating the type of shots, putting pressure on the rim. Like if you just make a league average amount of those free throws, you win by 10 to 15. Like magnify your successes. Great job hunting the rim. Great job playing it off 2 feet. Great job getting the type of shots that we want. Great job playing in dominoes. Great job playing in transition. Great job playing strong. That's a game that we want every single time. We love it. I can't wait till we do that again the next game. It's a whole different take. You focus on the successes, not on the failures of missing the free throws. So a lot of times, we can control the confidence of our team by where we put our focus. That's the second common mistake that we need to avoid in order to have a confident team. And here's a third common mistake that we need to avoid in order to have a confident team. Training things that we're not good at, as opposed to training things that we are good at. Because every day in practice, you're building confidence or you're losing confidence. Well, if we intentionally spend most of our time in practice only on things that we're weak at, then we're gonna have a lot of mistakes and a lot of failures. And I think especially when you're trying to build confidence, you need to like throw some softballs into practice. You need to do some games or some drills, some advantage games. Actually, the game of the week today is going to be one example of, we need to do things in practice that instill belief in our offense, that instill belief in our defense. And when you're struggling with confidence, you don't go out and challenge Goliath to a fight. You go and beat up on a couple of kids. All right. So we got to do some things that are going to build confidence. So I think that would be the reason for us to build confidence.
I was going to go measurement and model for my advice for this coach. So number one, model consistency, model confidence. Players will pick up on if you're deflated, on your tone, on what you say, just like you said, right? Like you can't fake it. 7, 38, and 55. So what matters when you're communicating? 7% is actually what you say. 38% of that is the tone in which you say it. And 55% is your body language. So oftentimes as coaches, we're in front of our team like, hey guys, it's going to be okay. You know, we got a game tomorrow. And it's just like, we're deflated. They can feel it. And that goes in game as well. So model confidence in your body language, most importantly. And then the second thing would be measurement. Confidence comes from doing the work and seeing the results. If you're measuring the wrong thing, which would be the scoreboard, you're not seeing the results, so you're going to lose confidence. If all we care about is just winning the game and we're 0-3 in our last three, well, your team will be, they will lose confidence, right? They will be down. They will be discouraged. So measure what matters. I would focus on defining our victory, which is what the V in Savvy stands for. And I would just focus on progress goals. Are we moving in the right direction? It might not be as fast as we want it to be, but if we are taking incremental steps towards the team we want to be, then we will get there eventually. And let's make sure that we cast that vision and build some excitement about the direction that we're headed and not just what's in the immediate right in front of us, because It's never as good or as bad as it seems. The season is full of peaks and valleys, and this is a valley, but we got to work hard, continue to do what we're doing. And maybe if we're not doing the right things, this is our wake-up call. Sometimes you got to go through the bad to know how good the good should feel. And then that would be my launching point with my team.
You know, the hate losing thing, I'm just going to say, let's put that into the next hours. Like, how do we teach a team to hate losing? Because I think that I don't want to lose what we just did around confidence. I think that's excellent. Simplicity wins, I hear. So let's keep it simple. And we can probably transition to mailbag.
Let's transition to mailbag. Tyler, I will lead off and ask you a question that came in our new paid community. For those that missed our season of giving spiel at the beginning, we have a paid community where it is exclusively for our savvy members. And this was one of the topics that came through yesterday. All right. This coach asked, his team is ball watching in two specific areas. And he is obviously an hours listener because he wants to be surgical in his approach here. Two ways that they're ball watching. One, they're not moving to space correctly. I'm assuming that is when somebody's hunting, so the other four players off the ball. And then on defense, they're not moving on and off the wall. So how do we get them to do that?
I actually would question, do you want them moving on the hunt or not?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's assume that they should be moving. Because okay. I completely agree and see where you're going. Like, hey, hold spacing, right? I think he's saying we're not in the right spots. How do I teach him to get in the right spots?
The best way that I found to get players into the right spots is with transition roles. Usually if you start shaped, you can stay shaped. And then every opportunity where we're not in our correct shape is just like transition. Then we can kind of reshape a little bit. And so if there's two phases of offense, yeah, there's neutral and advantage, which we call dominoes. Every time we get neutral is an opportunity to reshape. And just like in transition, right? In transition, we attack in dominoes, but the moment we're neutral, we want to reshape and get into our action. So I think the first in time that it's going to happen in every possession, and also the time it's going to happen most often, is in our initial transition. So if we focus all of our teaching to get in the right spots in transition, hold a really high standard for that, then it's going to be easier to repeat at different points in the possession where we get to neutral. My guess would be, and this is what I have observed, if we have trouble reshaping, we generally also have trouble shaping. I've been doing a lot of film breakdown for our paid community members, and I have yet to see a team that is as shaped as they can be in transition. And it's you got to fight for it every single day as a coach. Players don't want to run all the way to the corners in the baseline, because it's longer. They want to slow up at the wing. And with attrition, it just starts getting higher and higher on the wing. So we're not as committed to shaping. I've yet to see a rim runner or a short corner or a dunker spot porch player that actually clears all the way out to the porch heels on the baseline every single time. They start creeping more and more towards the block and higher off the baseline, right? I've yet to see a dragon or, you know, whoever your trailer on the play. I've yet to see them actually burst into space behind a penetration or arrive in shape super high and wide. They creep it. So like there's so many opportunities just in transition to shape. And if you can establish shape and transition, those habits will carry over into the rest of your possession. So that would be my suggestion on that. Defensively, I would just do a ton of ball and wall scrambles. I really like Florida Gulf Coast or dominoes for this. And I really just love defensively, you're either sprinting to the ball or you're sprinting to the wall. And I would just do that over and over and over again. I would train the speed at which they're moving, they're hustling, and then what they're actually saying. I think level one of requiring communication is, well, the more you talk, the more mentally engaged you are, and the more you're physically moving. The quieter you are, the slower you are. So I think associating communication with the physical movements would probably help you on the defensive side.
Yeah, really good. So defensively, I'll give you a practical or things that you can take to your practice today based on what Tyler said. I love the games that Tyler mentioned. Another one or constraint that you could add a violation to all of your games would be if someone's not in help, it's a defensive turnover, right? I like to play in three teams. Anytime you're playing three teams, dark team, y'all did not get to the wall, whistle, you're off, and new defense steps on. I love playing defense to offense. Offense rotates off. That way defense has to get a stop in order to play offense. If we keep not getting to the wall and we keep getting removed, we never get to play offense. So that would be kind of a cutthroat type game that you could play all throughout your practice. And then for offensive spacing, one, you can improve your spacing immediately by just putting tape on the floor, especially early in your season. Create clarity of exactly where are your action spots, where are your corner, what is your shape and alignment. Put tape there until your team doesn't need it, then remove it. That's going to provide clarity, and just the tape is a default teaching tool for you. Second thing, if we are not moving to optimal spots to create space or maintain space to the ball when somebody's hunting, start a small-sided game with players in wrong spots. Start with a small advantage, shoulder game. Once the ball cracks the shell, have everybody move to create space or give space to the ball. If they don't move the right way, stop, recreate, redo. 7 seconds or less teaching. Tell them where to go, recreate, and play.
The thing I really like about tape is like defensive tape as well. Not a lot of high school gyms do have a smile or a restricted area. I think that's an essential defensive spot. And we also use it for nine definition as well. You got to get a foot in the smile on offense for it to be a nine. So I think that would be an essential defensive tape. I like to tape the smile, and I like to tape jail for lock left teams. Like, where is jail? So they have a really visual cue of exactly where jail is. And especially if you have a team that can't remember right and left, then it's very helpful for them to have a visual cue of what's jail. Here's my last one for you. This one came from YouTube. This particular person commented on like 20 of our YouTube videos and was very complimentary, but had this problem. He's like, great stuff. Oh my gosh, this is amazing content. Oh, this is high level. But at the end of each one, he said, high level. Unfortunately, this stuff doesn't work for less experienced teams. Oh, this is really, really advanced stuff. Unfortunately, this wouldn't work for a bad team. Really high level, but this wouldn't work for players that don't really have high basketball IQ. Have you ever heard that before, Mark?
I have. Yeah, I would say then they don't fully understand it. Because can we take it down to its simplest form? Like maybe we're, I don't know what the examples are, what he was commenting on. Let's say it's some sort of game, right? Where you mentioned Gulf Coast. It's one of my favorite. We're creating a closeout read and a smile read for offense, and defensively working on close offs and getting to the wall. One might see that and say, oh, well, I can't do that with my fifth grade team. Maybe not. Maybe it would take a long time for them to learn that game, but could you create a closeout read and a smile read with your fifth graders? Absolutely. So I would just say, be surgical, right? Like break it down into its simplest parts, start at the first principle or the first concept, and then you can always build up from there. But I also think the best coaches in the world make complex things really simple and easy to understand.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And I would add this, if your players are not experienced enough to play conceptually, and so you don't teach them to play conceptually, they will never be experienced enough to play conceptually and never get taught. So if it's too complex for them now, it will always be. And that argument is accurate. And unfortunately, it's always accurate until the first person, the first coach, the first leader decides to revolutionize the way the game is taught and played, which is what we're trying to do. That's at the college level, right? This is a little too complex. I was working with a coach back all the way back when my brother was playing college basketball, and I had just gotten out of college coaching. My brother transferred to a little mid-major D1, and in the recruiting process for my younger brother transferring, I got to develop a relationship with this coach. And so this coach started to do lunch and coffee with me throughout the season, and he was complaining. I mean, this is a Division I men's college basketball. We just have a low IQ team, Tyler. With a low IQ team, he's like, I think I just have to put in sets because, you know, every time I try to teach him to play, you know, in flow or continuity, he's like, they take bad shots. We're not getting the right shots with the right people. I got to put in plays so that the right people take the shots at the Division I level. And so that's just an example. Like, it's the same mindset at the Division I level or the fifth grade level. And it is true. I'm not saying it wasn't true for this Division I coach. I'm not saying it wasn't true for this fifth grade coach. But at some point, someone has to decide to bite the bullet and make it not true. It's hard. It's always going to be hard. But are you going to be the one that changes it? Or are you just going to pass them on no better than you found them?
That's so well said. I'm glad that question was asked because I get that a lot too. With it, it's framed as basketball IQ, which if you want to learn how to develop your team's basketball IQ, that's what we're doing all the month of December. So join us for our 4-week deep dive into that. Like, you get a paycheck, right? Like, oh, my team doesn't have a high basketball IQ. Okay, well, you're a teacher of basketball. So teach the game and your team will develop a basketball IQ. And start yesterday. Instead of saying, well, my team's not skilled enough to do that. Okay, well, then we can deconstruct, we can modify and tweak, but start teaching conceptually now or the way you want your team to play if you had the pick of your roster, because then one, you're a better teacher of it, and two, your teams are more experienced in it where you're going to get the exponential growth like we want with our finances and our financial advice, but you're going to get the exponential growth because you're going to stack years and practices and seasons playing the way and coaching the way that you want to.
Okay, I think that's a great transition into our game of the week. And I'm going to name this game of the week 5v3 ping pong. But I like to, even if your setup's going to be the same, I like to name the game or name the drill with the objective of the drill. So, you know, attack training is an organization. We use a lot of Savvy. It's in our drill book. You can check it out. But there's 18 different ways we can do attack training. And last night we did an attack training. We just called it weak, where we are just working on weaking ball screens from both sides of the floor out of attack training. So we didn't call it attack training. We called it weak because I wanted our players to associate our language with what we were trying to get better at, our focus. So this is 5v3 ping pong, but I would name this game 9-7 or 0. 9-7 or 0. So we have five players on offense across the middle of the floor. We have three defenders on each end of the floor. We have three teams on here. This team of five is going to play until they score 5 points by ones and twos. They can only shoot nines or sevens. If they shoot anything else, their team goes back to zero. So even if they attempt, make, miss, whatever, they attempt a 5 or a 4 or a 6, they attempt anything else, doesn't matter, tweet, you're back to zero. And so they're playing ping pong back and forth. They're attacking 5v3. The reason that we are going 5v3 is because we want to make it pretty easy for them to catch with an advantage, to catch in dominoes. One additional thing that will make it a zero in this game is they must hunt nines first, meaning they can't just pass the ball outside the shell around the perimeter until someone casts up a seven. Because by definition, that's not going to be a 7 for us, because a 7 comes after we have hunted a 9, after we've tried to crack the shell. So there should be lots of burn cuts available with this extra space. There should be lots of drives available. There should always be an open player, so there should not be over dribbling. And we should never have to run an action, because we are in dominoes inherently 5v3. If the defense gets a steal or a stop, they just kick the ball back to the offense and the offense goes the other direction. If the offense scores, they go the other direction and they're on until they get 5 points. When you first do this, and this happened with us last night, when you first do this, you're going to send the first team, maybe the first two teams, back to zero a lot. And it's really painful and upsetting. And you're going to feel a little bit bad as a coach. It's like, oh, they were almost in the smile for a 9, but it was actually just a floater. They were almost outside the 3-point line, but they just shot an off the catch long 2. And you send them back to 0. And how quickly will their shot selection change? Very, very quickly. One additional thing, you can actually flip this. I also love this 9-7-0 game to address what one of our coaches asked in the mailbag. It's just, how do we sprint off the wall? Because at all times in this scenario, on these swings, you must always guard the ball and you must always have someone on the wall. That's your defensive emphasis. And I would just assign one of your assistant coaches, and I was fortunate enough to have two. I had an assistant coach at each end whose only focus was on defense. I was focused on offense, and they were just reminding, right? Zadie, get to the wall. Zadie, get to the wall. Zadie, get to the ball. Zadie, get to the ball. D, wall, D, wall. Always have the ball guarded and always get to the wall. That is 9-7 or 0. Coaches, as you build out your practice plan and your drill book, you don't need more drills. You just need more variations. So like 5v3 is a game. But like it could be called, you know, ball and wall. It could be called 9-7 or 0. It could be called Joker install. It could be called whatever, because it's just what you're focusing on. So you don't need a new drill. You just need a new focus. Once you have your kind of go-to games and drills, Mark and I travel all over the world and we install things really, really quick. Like I said, I just got back from North Dakota and, you know, they were shocked at how much they improved in just 2 days. Shot, oh my gosh, how do we improve so much in just 2 days? And, you know, it's because I don't go in and design a new install practice every time I go. It's pretty much the same thing every single time. And we come back to the same things over and over again. When you narrow your focus and just come back to the same things and hit it multiple different ways, you're just going to improve a lot faster than, okay, now we got to do our baseline inbounds. Now we got to do defensive rebounding. Now we got to do, you know, just simplify and come back to the same things.
Pre-game talks or preparation. I have found less is more in pregame and postgame. And we really want to flip the locker room and make it way more player led and engaging than a coach standing up in front of the team and reading the scouting report to them. So a few tips on how to improve your pregame talks. Number one, in your preparation, your objectives are your keys to winning the game. And around your keys, make sure those are very specific and sticky. So instead of rebound, right? Like we're facing a bigger team, we have to rebound. So objective rebound. Let's go surgical in that and let's go deeper on one area of rebounding. Maybe it's physicality. Maybe it's escape the paint to go block out. So escape the paint would be our sticky language. For physicality, it would be draw first blood. Like where are the windshield, not the bug, right? So those are our keys to winning. And what I would do, and I got this from Doug Lamov, really, really good. Pre-game talk, say, all right, team, we've talked about escaping the paint. When you hear escape the paint, think about what your role is, where you should be, and what you're looking at. Partner up with the person next to you and talk about escape the paint. Go. And then debrief on that. Okay, great. Maybe come up with one measurement tool that we're going to look at in the first half and come back at halftime one. Or if we're facing a pressing team and we've been saying, meet your pass all week. That was an objective at practice. What's your role? Where should you be? And what are you looking at? I think that's a much more engaging and sticky pregame process than just reading the scouting report to the team.
Very excited about Season of Giving. Hope that you do take advantage of this this offer. Price goes back up in January. So if you want to spend a year with us, this is your best chance to do it. I mean, we just want to give you that discount. And please share the referral option with people. Hey, here's something you might like as a coach. Please don't keep the gifts for yourself. Share the gifts so that we can together revolutionize the way the game is taught and played in a fun, fast, and free way. I had a college basketball player who's now a parent of one of the players in our program at the end of practice last night, like gather up all the young players and like, do you know how lucky you are? He's like, to be taught the game in this way. He said, I went through 4 years of college basketball and I didn't get taught this way. I just got yelled at every single day. And I just got, you know, put on the line for conditioning when I made a mistake. He's like, do you know how lucky you are? Because he played at a very high level, 6'9" athlete. And it was just like, it was so heartwarming for me to even hear that. Cause like, he knows enough to know how different it is because he's been in basketball culture. And that's what we're on a mission to do. That's what we're on a mission to do. And like, he has 3 daughters in our program. And when someone like that who knows the game is choosing to put his kids in this situation, you just know you're doing something right. And that was just so encouraging. And I would love for every coach to have that feeling because he knows, he loves how his daughters are being coached, whether we win or lose a single game. And wouldn't you love every parent in your program coaches to be like, you know what, whether we're winning or losing, I love how my son is being coached. I love how my daughter's being coached. I am behind this coach 100% because of the way they are teaching and playing the game. That's our hope, so that you can put your head down at night, win or lose, just like confident and satisfied with the impact that you're having. That's what we're doing here at Savvy. And thank you for being a part of it. Because if you chose to listen to this podcast, you vibe with it a little bit. So Mark, thanks for making me more savvy today. And everyone, invest in appreciating assets.
Yeah, refer coaches to the paid community, get your $97, invest that in real estate.
And go buy a house.
Yeah, that's right. All right, everyone. Thanks for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week. Stay savvy.
Stay savvy.